Thank you. We're joined, as usual, by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
Maureen Moakley is away this week. Filling in for her is the politics economics reporter for WPRI.com, Ted Nesi. Good morning, Ted.
Ian, thanks for having me.
And we're pleased to welcome back as our guest State General Treasurer Seth Magaziner. Thank you for joining us.
Great to be here.
General Electric plans to initially bring 100 digital technology jobs to Rhode Island. That's some good news and certainly a win for Governor Raimondo. The governor described this as a team effort that involved the General Assembly, the federal delegation, and the mayor of Providence. But she certainly made an aggressive push earlier this year to try and bring GE to Rhode Island. Treasurer Magaziner, do you think these jobs would be coming to Rhode Island without Governor Raimondo?
Well, I think that anytime you are trying to compete to draw high-paying tech jobs like these to your state, you need to have tools at your disposal that will help you to incentivize that job creation. And you also have to have leadership that is aggressive and gets out there and makes the push. So I give the governor a lot of credit. I give the General Assembly a lot of credit for giving her the tools that she needed to deliver these jobs. It's a great day for Rhode Island. It's great news.
How about that, Scott? We see that on one hand, GE jobs are coming, and that's good news, but there's been a dearth of activity in the 195 district. What do you make of that contrast?
You know, I just think it takes a long time to get the 195 thing done. You know, we all know that this thing wasn't going to happen overnight. The GE jobs are fine, and I think the state's money that we're going to have to give these folks is reasonable. If you look at the deal that Massachusetts got for 800 jobs, higher paying, obviously, because it's their corporate headquarters, but I think it's going to be about $5.6 million in tax incentives for GE.
Over 10 years.
Yeah, so it looks to me like it's within the ballpark of what Massachusetts was offering, and I think it's a... some people don't like any tampering with a free market, and I understand Mike Stenhouse will yell about it probably, but I think it's within reason, and I think it's probably a good move. It's always good to have a governor who's proactive. I remember when Link Almond was governor and Fidelity came here, there was a lot of personal lobbying by Almond to get that done. And I think we did see in Raimondo's leadership here a very proactive way of doing it.
Ted Nesi, how big a factor was Governor Raimondo in this news from GE?
I think it's significant. You know, I think she can be very pushy, and I mean that as a compliment with these folks. She talks about how much she calls them up. She uses her pretty sizable Rolodex. I also think one of the reasons the governor's staff is so happy about this news is you got to look at the type of jobs these are. These are GE's new digital industrial jobs. GE is not a light bulb manufacturer anymore. They're trying to become a tech company. And those kind of jobs, frankly, when I heard they might give her something when she lost the headquarters, thought maybe some back office kind of deal. But this is the thing that CEO Jeff Immelt says he wants GE to be in the future, and it's going to be be percolating a bit in Providence. So that could be good news over time for the state, too, if this all works out as it's been explained.
The new state budget passed this week by the House Finance Committee contains some tools sought by our guest, Treasurer Seth Magaziner, to better manage public debt in Rhode Island. Treasurer, why don't you tell us what difference will this make for taxpayers?
Well, I'm very excited that the House included these debt management tools in the budget. It's something that I've been pushing for. I could talk about this all day, but the big picture is this. Rhode Island has more than $10 billion of public debt outstanding and more than 100 different entities that are authorized to issue public debt between all of your special districts, your water districts, your fire districts, et cetera. And up until now, there has been very little oversight and very little accountability. For example, the last time that a debt affordability study, a study of how much debt we should have, was performed was in the 1990s. We are still using those same targets and those same ratios that were put into place almost 20 years ago. Among other things, this new suite of tools will allow us to do the first real debt affordability study since the 90s. It will allow us to make sure that when not only the state, but cities and towns and districts are issuing debt, they're doing it efficiently and using best practices and getting the best possible rates and the lowest possible fees. So there's a lot of good tools in there. It's wonky stuff, but it's important because there's a lot of money at stake.
The information alone, too, is important to have. I mean, Tim White and I have done a couple stories where we've tried to gather across all these districts and municipalities, whether pension or debt data, and it can be very, very hard to get. And if, you know, reporters who get paid to try to find it can't find it, you know, if you're a regular taxpayer would like to know how your money's being spent, it might be even harder for them. So shining a light on this, I think, could be helpful and pay dividends.
Let's move on and talk a little bit about what's been a hot topic at the state State House recently, legislative grants. Legislative leaders did away with one of two legislative grant programs this week, but they're maintaining control over the smaller grants, usually $1,000, $3,000 to youth sports leagues, local soup kitchens, things like that. Treasurer Magaziner, it's my understanding that as state treasurer, you sign off on the checks for these grants. Would you have legal authority to challenge the constitutionality of these grants if you wanted to?
I don't believe so. You know, our office is in charge of making sure that that money gets to where the legislature appropriates it, but we don't have control over where the money goes. Our job is just to make sure it gets there. I think that this recent change to the community service grants, it's a step in the right direction. I'm a former board member at Common Cause. Transparency has been a big theme of mine in my time as treasurer. And the fact that these community service grants now are going to be individual line items in the budget that we see before the budget is passed is a step in the right direction.
Scott, it's rare to see legislative leaders yielding any of their power. At the same time, critics are saying that rank-and-file lawmakers still have to curry favor to get the smaller legislative grants. Your reaction to this?
I think some of this is overkill. It's the Ray Gallison overkill thing. There's a lot of media McCarthyism out there about this. And let's look at what's really going to happen. Things like the summer learning program that United Way runs, Crossroads, very good programs are going to take substantial hits. Now, these small little grants, $2,000 to the Veterans Committee, the Historical Society, yes, it's $2 million in a budget of $9 billion. Can't we have some proportionality here? I mean, look at a Congress since they got rid of earmarks. They can't do anything. I don't see anything wrong with things that help the community and help the speaker. You know, keep, this is not a debating society. It's not the Common Cause board meeting. In fact, Common Cause, when's the last time they released their donors? I ask you as a former member, Seth.
Well, I'm not going to, you know, talk about Common Cause as an organization and their practices.
But
the bottom line is, I mean, I think when it's the state, when it's taxpayer money and public money, transparency is important. And I don't disagree that a lot of these grants go to good causes. I've also been involved with Crossroads for a long time, and we're glad that the state has been supporting Crossroads. But the importance is you got to be transparent about it.
Of course.
Let the people know where the money's going before it passed the budget, before it's too late to do anything about it. So I don't think anyone's arguing against having appropriations to organizations that deserve it and that do good work. You just got to be transparent about it.
Ted, how do you come down on the question of whether legislative leaders went far enough?
Well, like you, Ian, I try not to have an opinion or at least express it. But I think, I think they would argue they went after the problem that was identified in the last month, which is a much larger program, the community service grants. You know, I wonder how much people at home can keep track of all these programs. Ledge grants, $2 million smaller. Those are the little leagues and such. But, you know, I think what we did see was clearly with the bigger program that's being reformed, a need for reforming. The fact that Ray Gallison was getting this money and everything and not even filing correct board member names was pretty shocking when he's getting $70,000 a year from taxpayers and is running the budget. So I think they would have been hard pressed not to fix it.
All right. We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Thank you.
From WPRI.com, Ted Nesi.
Thanks, Ian.
And State General Treasurer Seth Magaziner.
Thank you very much, guys.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoyed the conversation, please visit our website at ripr.org.
Major funding for Political Roundtable is provided by the Rhode Island Foundation, using philanthropy to move Rhode Island forward. Details at rhodeislandfoundation.org.